Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
a big talk on strategy. So I've sort of reached certain thresholds here in rehabilitation where I'm able to walk for a long while, speak for a long while, get sort of ideas down. So that target I hope has been reached, and what will probably happen is that I'll probably get some proper testing and hopefully get onto professional rehabilitations and continue going. One of the things is that I don't have a sort of an end point. So what's happened is my breathing's improved better than it was before. My memory has changed, or it's not the same. It's sort of changed, and it's taking longer and harder to remember things. But then there's an upside to that the memory is sort of not as sharp and expansive, but it's sort of expanding in another dimension where I can sort of see the strategies associated with it. The overall going forward, you've got all these sort of like playing tables, advanced areas, that is the physical, the cognitive rehabilitation, the general support that I'm giving myself by actually producing software to move ahead. And then as I'm putting things together, as I'm sort of repairing, I sort of say, is this, look, you're quite relaxed, like, you know, you've knocked flat, so you expect to make mistakes. Have I made mistakes? Oh, look, there are some actual mistakes built into the system, mistakes built into the actual processes here. And how do we actually move forward? Because one of the things we can't really afford to do is carry the mistakes forward that I suppose I've uncovered. I'm not going up, but we can't carry that forward into education. We can't really afford to educate our kids in the wrong direction, that is, so that they can do better at exams that we sat in the 70s and 80s and stuff like that. We can't do that, but we also can't tell them stuff which is out of date, that, you know, in future this will happen, but and it's already happened, and the result has been that. So that sort of is a killing thing. And then there's the idea of what we're actually educating for. Previously, I think we were educating for a skill set for a functional device. The society is moving sufficiently slowly that we could actually educate a set of basic skills and get them up to a point where we can actually shove them off, let them run. Now that's becoming increasingly not increasingly, I suppose, irrelevant, and it's actually a bit more important to actually train resilience, leadership, and group skills. That's just my opinion, because as sure as hell, what we're doing at the moment is we're teaching really seriously out of date concepts in an out of date way, and we're getting fewer and fewer students in a position to move forward. And when you look at the students who can move forward, it really doesn't matter what you teach them, that they'll move forward anyway. So the actual structure of asking the hard questions, is it relevant? Are we doing the best possible? Now, these are sort of forbidden questions if you're actually practicing. You're not supposed to actually ask those questions, because the answer is yes, 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 it's all fantastic. Look at me, aren't I great? And I can teach by actually taking from a palette of the quality teaching processes. If I've got these attributes, and these attributes are here, but they're not assembled in any coherent machine, it's still there. That's good enough. So this is the overall thing, is that what happens after quality teaching? So quality teaching, there's a quality teaching model, which really is the nightmare mind of someone who hasn't quite actually, this is a horrible thing to say, who hasn't quite probably achieved their PhD or the whole group. It's like really a master's level output, an honours thesis, where it's everything is there, but it hasn't got any any process, any strategy to take yourself forward. And so this is a fundamental thing that I think can be addressed is, do we have the wherewithal to actually produce a dynamic education machine which can actually run alongside students and connect them with problems, with society, with themselves? Is that, can we have an education machine? And at the moment, people are still in the old model of saying, look, here's an area, here's acid base, here's Mars, here's a few facts about it, and what does it really mean? And what happens is that if you have facts outside their quality teaching mode, if you have facts which stretch, they may well be very relevant facts, but it doesn't really work into it, because there's a set of recipe facts, there's a recipe of attributes that you have in quality teaching, and there's a recipe of facts, and you just pour it in a pot like a stew, and the theory is that it's going to work. But of course, the actual process is very much different from that, and the last thing you should do is actually test whether any of this works. So there's an overall push that I think that can go there. So at the moment, I'm producing podcasts, and that's one dimension. There's many, many dimensions, and that I'm actually beginning to populate each podcast with simple first order assets. First, this is an asset which a teacher can use and teach with a podcast into the classroom. That is with a scramble word, but it could be anything else. With a bit of software, it could be a crossword, it could be any automated activity. And the importance for me in terms of the automation aspect is that I'm doing a certain amount of podcasting, and I really can't afford to spend a huge amount of time developing everything, because the aim of the game is to actually get speaking, get thinking, get processing. But one should actually look ahead or beyond the idea of these particular assets and say, oh, this is not good enough. And really, in a certain sense, the people detracting, sort of barring the gate or blowing up the bridges in front of me in my attempt to get back, they're actually doing the correct thing. That is saying, this is not good enough. They're doing it for the wrong reasons, but saying, look, this is just not adequate. Now, the fact that what they're what they're doing is, you know, 10 times more, less adequate. You know, if they do a finder word or have a puzzle or produces questions, that's by actually saying, look, 10 lists is not enough, we have 100. We've got 100 lists, or you need 1,000, or you need, this has got only 3 options in the quizzes, it needs 4. Yeah, they'll say all that type of stuff, but really, basically, it's a class beyond. What is the point of just listeners? What's the point of a quiz if it's not built into a larger object? And the problem is that we're building in a world of smart technology, we're still trying to build a generic device. So we're still giving people the base mobile phone, so to speak, and not something which they can personalize, which has all the attributes of a mobile phone. So really what my vision is sort of like the iPhone equivalent in education, but of education resources, that is built in. And yes, so on the ground, people do need to go slow and fast in all sorts of complicated ways to get around all sorts of obstacles. So a lot of the obstacle, particularly with children, because children are sort of built basically, they come to you, they don't have the information. They do have emotional structure, which is really good. You can talk to an emotional structure, you can empower it. But the thing with an emotional structure is there's a feeling of, can I do it? Confidence, attention. It's all there. It's all there for the taking and development. But it may be that they've come in from sport. They have a feeling about it. They may have a feeling that interests them. They may want to actually not challenge themselves, be able to do things that they can do, or there can be something that they actually do want to challenge. And when you add all that up, that's not a textbook. That's not a standardized lesson plan built by a code which ticks certain boxes, which allows me to say I've done this. For what reason? Not to educate, but to actually promote yourself through an education system. Now, this is sort of a bit heresy, but I've really come in from a research lab and military training, and you see this, and you see these people are not imaginative, but they're not they're imaginative, they're not conceptually imaginative of what could be done. And what can be done is that for these podcasts, for these regions, we can actually produce sophisticated apps, for which there are a whole grade of activities, a whole grade of explanations, a whole grade of different things. So what's happened with me is that I've had the reboot, and so I've picked up textbooks. I know the general principles anyway, but I will have forgotten key things, or I will have a whole area just wiped out. Like previously I could do Maxwell's equations, no worries, but now I don't know whether I didn't really ever understand them in the first place, but now I've got to go back and actually think about some of these curl integrals and the surfaces and how this goes, and go back and think about tenses and all that type of stuff. So I really myself don't know whether I never really understood or I felt I understood it. But the structure's there. But that being said, having taught a range of students, they have a range of needs and a range of ways to go through. And basically, you want to be able to produce a range of things that on the day you can actually, as a skilled person, can actually pick the best way forward. And so what's happening? To a certain extent, I want to talk about the concept of transparency or visibility. I think one of the things that I detect from working with teachers is that they've got a real strong sense of where they are and how visible they are, they can represent what they're doing quite well. Now for me, I feel a bit invisible, but myself, I'm invisible, but I can, on the other side, I can't see myself, but I can see some mathematics, some logic for it. So I can see how we can marry the mathematics of humanity, I think, as far as I can see. This is the corrugated numbers, and it doesn't have certain things. It doesn't have closure. It doesn't have set theory. It does have functionality. It does have the ability to track and structure thoughts and follow a whole lot of humanistic things. And I can see this, and I can see the ability to automate, do podcasts, and I can see, oh, look at this, and I say, what curve is this audience metric following? It's not following exponential. It's going to plateau at this rate, and therefore it's got so many podcasts per hour or per day will lead to that level, will not lead to expansion. But what will happen is that maintaining that level, I will actually increase the automation, reduce the amount of effort that I have to put into, and slowly knock off the emergency effort. So say if a podcast doesn't upload, I have to go back here and spend some 15 minutes, 10 minutes working out what's going on. So I'll be able to eliminate that, and eventually I'll have a scaled growth, especially if I can actually write up the software and distribute it. I can actually get many people overseas and producing podcasts. Perhaps they mightn't be good. You know, not they mightn't be good, but the actual concept. Maybe their students may say, "Well, I've heard enough. I don't need to hear any more." So there's that aspect. So I suppose for me, I clearly see the strategy, the maths, the problem, but I don't think people clearly see me. So what happens is that I go along and I say, "Oh look, we need quality content. Cosmos magazine is quality content." I get a sign off from them, and then I go and see that they have actually decided that they have this fairly wide ranging vision, where they actually produce a podcast, put a quiz, make things relevant, get the distribution, but they still haven't actually got the exponential growth that we're looking for. And there is no competition, because we are really in fundamentally different conceptual spaces. And so what is that conceptual space? How come I'm producing podcasts, I'm producing quizzes, and they're producing, I suppose, some content of it, and it's still very much bound to the course, and it's going down a particular position, and although I can produce stuff, I am invisible to them, but I can see the potential way forward. And so this goes, what do they see? And I think what they see is themselves. And this is what teachers see, so they see very much themselves. All the statements I see and all the structures are all talking about themselves and about their structure and where things are. I've been said, "Oh, look, I can link away to their resources." And of course, I'll do it. I suppose there is this big gap for me at the moment in terms of actually trying to think through. Like, I am mathematically aware. It's hard to say. It's sort of a really strange thing to say in terms of mathematically. I thought, in order to actually work on the maths, you have to actually say, "Yep, look, this is the way of the future. This has to be right. This is more efficient. This has these attributes further up." So what does it say, some of the attributes further up of these apps? One is that they can be communally written. That is, the app has no longer got an individual author. It can have multiple authors coming in. It can be orchestrated. It's intelligent in terms that you can interrogate the app for, are there outstanding issues? Are there conflicts? Are there dependencies? And it can do all these sorts of things. So I know mechanically it's a winner. And now for me, it's strange. Like 2 years ago, possibly 2 years ago, it was the issue was one of, I suppose, a sort of tranquil awe, as you'd seen these fantastic things, had these fantastic experiences, really had no one in your walk of life to actually walk with you or discuss discuss what's going on in a meaningful way. And, you know, and that was something. That was, in fact, quite awesome. But it was all going to come to an end. And, you know, it wasn't that you could do anything about it. You just weren't going to waste the last, whatever it is, last month or 2 months trying to knock on people's doors when you'd been through that and the situation had been negative. And it was for a reason that I'm still guessing at, but I just think guessing up that the reason that people can't see the future is because they're looking at their own navels. Is my own. I'm not going to say anything against people who can't see the future, who can't think into the future. But that was that. And so what's happened is that I've sort of been picked out of that timeline of the timeline, the end timeline. I've been plopped sort of in a crazy fashion on the other side. And certain things have begun to happen. So I've begun programming and putting the theory together. So what is the next step? And so I sort of very visualize these strategic areas coming forward as sort of these sort of, I don't know, grey, furry sort of spheres near and far away. So the near ones I can do, the far ones, you know, just incomprehensible there. And there's a feeling that somewhere out there is another sort of dimension of strategy, people who do understand how to push this forward. And there's this feeling that one of the fundamental strategies is there ain't no money, there ain't no entrepreneurialism where I'm at, so just hit, just pump out as much innovation as possible, and then form alliances. So and this is a what you call almost an Aussie alliance. So what, and it's hard to explain in terms of the industry and the people here are very distributed. It's gone from 25 million people, but previously when I was kicking around, it was 18 million or something like that. And most of those people were in office jobs, you know, very few industries, very, very few behind. And also for distance, the farm, the next farm would be along, you know, 50 kilometers away. You just come and help, and you form alliances of no complexity. So that sort of thing happens very much with say Blurt, something which is positive. I'm just going to get in and support it. Cosmos Magazine, whatever, I'll get in and support it. So there are these basic things that, if you call it sort of naive cooperation, that's what I'll push forward on, naive cooperation, and just support it. But really, this speaks to the need for a STEM alliance based on professional demeanor. Now that sounds strange. It's sort of rather than it's good for you, it's good for the nation, we need it. It's almost this hostage taking. If we don't do it, the society is going to miss out by that much. No, it's we can really reposition us where we are internationally as a planet, not by actually saying that one person's profit is another person's loss, or, you know, not a competitive stuff. It is actually pure professional demeanor to actually approach STEM with the demeanor of a scientist. You know, that it just seems the most natural process, that if you want to actually promote STEM, you have to have a certain disinterest into how you're going. So science has a disinterest in the actual results. You are just a witness there to a witness to nature. And so it's similar to actually like the real concept of a lawyer. So there's a sort of the American's concept of a lawyer, where you win the case for the client, whereas lawyers and the whole system is to assist the court find a just decision within limits, without naivety and not making it unnecessarily difficult for yourself. It's the aim of assist the court. And so really, STEM people, professionals, have not the job to make us rich. It's a job to make us more professionally STEM-y. It's hard to say, a professional STEM-y type of person. So to actually try and get that forward. So, so we're at this strategic crossroad where what is the direction forward? How can we do it? It's sort of an understanding that the road is blocked. The road is blocked for the fundamental cause that the road is open. So the road is blocked in terms of that no one can see you because all they can see is what they're doing in their local area, in the way that they conceptualize. So we have these people producing these teacher resources linked to the magazine and stuff like that, and we have teachers not picking up, and we have teachers basically not teaching the next generation. That is because they're trying to teach things which are 20, 30 years old, and they're teaching with concepts which have been discredited. So there's this rationalization. It's sort of, if I can explain, because I've got a little bit before I walk back home, it's sort of like, so in Australia, and this is with no, I'm not talking about the facts, I'm talking about the concept of the legend. So the Europeans had to cross the Blue Mountains, and they were in a relatively fertile valley in the Sydney area, sort of marginally fertile. It was not fertile by European standards by any extent. You know, there was just crazy. They'd just put a seed in the ground and, hey, nothing had happened like this. So it took a while to get going. But there's this concept of what is beyond the Blue Mountains, and so which is where I'm at, this sort of blue labyrinth, this crisscross of confusing gullies and canyons and stuff like that. And the legend is that it was impenetrable, but historians believe that that was sort of just an urban myth, if there was such an urban myth. But when they came across the other side, there was a whole it turned from a bit of farming lesson into eventually deserts. And really, in the sense, that's a certain sense where we're at, in terms of that we're in the Sydney Basin, and we can't really conceptualize crossing the Blue Mountains. And even if you do cross, there's nothing there because we haven't conceptualized it. I don't know, it's sort of hard to say. So the reason that things aren't going forward, one is that I haven't done the work. I have to actually get more software up and running. But even if I do, there's not going to be an open path, because conceptually the terrain doesn't exist. The terrain doesn't exist because the only terrain that everyone has been built upon is a future where they see themselves in it. And when they see themselves in it, they ask questions about How will I look if I teach this? Have I actually met the requirements of teaching this, which go through the key, which I have understood, which is a disordered jumble of concepts and students, and we just add it together, and then what we do is we filter that afterwards to see what is positive and what's negative, and we emphasize the positive and explain away the negative. And that really is sort of like a centrally internal way of thinking things, where as what I believe is that we've actually got to construct a system of resources which is adaptable, is usable, unfoldable, adapts. So if you can imagine, the best textbook ever opens up with a really good explanation, and then there's levels of exercise that anyone can go into. And it works for one class, it works for another. And as someone discovers something at one side of the world, the textbook changes, it modifies. And as something becomes out of date, it modifies immediately. It's out of date. And then you can dive through and take things from exercise. So there's many, many things which appear to be blocking the path forward. One is the culture. One is the conceptualization of teaching as a form of ticker box. This ticker box with no structure. Structure. So there's many conceptual things going, and I myself don't know what the actual path forward is. I know the mechanism of a path forward, and that is going out and putting things together. But myself, I don't have a recipe. So what happens is that I will take a general group of ideas, and I won't throw away some. I'll promote some and remove a few little back and actually think about it. And then into the mix, I'll just quietly on the background start manoeuvring the software to get us there. So that's where it is at the moment. This is a bit of a rambling talk, but we can get there. We will do it, and I sort of expect and understand and almost welcome being ignored. And if people weren't blowing up bridges before me, sort of making things extremely difficult for me to return to work and rehab, there'd be something wrong, because they are following a script which obviously is mad, and the shortcoming is not being able to say, to step back and say, look, this is mad, we can't be doing that. That's really getting into the heart of it. The madness is not seeing the madness, and I don't know what's happened to me. I've detached from the entire mad scenario and am pushing ahead. And so let's hope I can put enough directions forward, deliberate, random, and I say pseudo random, put together and put the different tasks together and let the actual ideas flow from reading of the Japanese Invading Malaya, flow from reading The New Scientist, flow from reading right through the syllabuses. And as I get the technology down, I think what I will do is get the apps running, the actual app structure running, get the Rawlsian ethics and justice bound to every lesson area. and push along with there. I'll then afterwards get the blurt technology on and then reignite YouTube going ahead. And so fortunately, hopefully, the idea is that when I get back to teaching, they're going to have a welcoming party for me where they'll be examining every lesson I do, trying to fault pick it and really put me through the mill. But if I can actually get for, or previously for every lesson I produce, I was producing a lesson plan, a website, a seating plan, just knocking off reports and scanning all the students' works, doing it, that was not good enough. And for sure as hell, what I'm going to do now, it will not be good enough, but let's see how far I can get, if I can get sufficient readers, interest, interlocking resources, perhaps I can get there. And I suppose the idea is, let's do it. You know, this is what life's about. This is taking on the tough challenge, standing in the face of the impossible. And yes, it is impossible because I've been told it's impossible, but impossible is not unthinkable. It's not unresearchable. And that's the whole essence of research. Like, I've been looking at lasers and robotics, and at a certain point, yes, it has been impossible. Yes, things have not been able to be done. And I've tried, and it hasn't actually opened a path forward in the original direction I'm thinking, but it's opened other paths forward. So yeah, I do not contradict the what I'm up against. I am up against the impossible, but the impossible provides so many opportunities if you actually put enough heart into it. And that's what I'm going to try and do. I'm going to try and put some heart into it and actually start to link educational assets into every lesson, and hopefully link with people to get a community, and perhaps I'll get across the line. But the general gist is, no, that can't be done. Well, if it can't be done, so be it. To quote a famous Australian, such is life. Let's go for it. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.